And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. It is 1 p.m. Up next is Terra Verde. Stay tuned.
From the Amazon basin, from the magnificent redwoods of California to the icy majesty of the Arctic, life on Earth faces an unprecedented threat from careless development. Join Terra Verde over lunch today to find out about the unfolding future of the planet.
And welcome to Terra Verde, a weekly environmental show on KPFA or KPFB in Berkeley or KFCF in Fresno. I'm your host, Adam Greenfield. Hello. Well, first of all, I just want to declare my attachment to today's subject for the show. Back in 2006, my girlfriend at the time showed me a video made by the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, of factory farming. And it shocked me. The next day, I had a portion of my mother's lasagna, beef lasagna, and then I was still hungry, tried to go for seconds, and couldn't bring myself to eat it. And ever since I've been a vegetarian, I guess it was a kind of emotive cause. But, you know, ever since then, I've read and heard a lot about how not eating meat can actually be more effective than not driving. How, according to a recent UN report, livestock actually produces more CO2 worldwide than vehicles. Well, my guest today has gone a lot further than I did. She wasn't a vegetarian for 4 years. She was a vegan for 20 years almost. Then, after all of that, she renounced that path and last year published a controversial book entitled The Vegetarian Myth, in which she slams vegetarianism and instead points the finger at a more profound issue than whether or not we choose to eat meat. Well, we've got the author of that book. Her name is Lierre Keith, and she joins us today on Terra Verde. Lierre, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for joining us. Now, first of all, can you tell us about the personal journey that took you to veganism and then why you turned away from that? I know it's a long story, so if you could keep it brief.
Three sentences. Okay. Like you, I came across information about the horrors of factory farming and was completely revolted on every level. I was only 16 at the time, and I didn't have any other information besides that, and so it seemed obvious that, of course, you know, no ethical person should be participating in this. And I want to be very clear that, you know, nobody could defend factory farming, no matter what you eat. It's just really horrifying on every level. So this is not to excuse, you know, human domination or, you know, the kinds of tortures that are, you know, happening to animals in the name of capitalism and whatnot. All of that has to stop. So just, you know, we think we all have that in common. Anyway, so I did that for almost 20 years, and I permanently destroyed my body. There's a lot of us out here now, I would say a whole generation of us, who actually tried this and found that it did not work long term. So then I had to revisit the whole thing. So why had I done this? What did it mean? In the meantime, over those 20 years, I had accumulated a vast amount of information about, in fact, how destructive agriculture was to the planet. And that information was very conflicted, because being a vegan, of course, that's what you eat. So I had to keep settling that aside and saying, I'm not going to look at that. The cost was too high emotionally, because it brought into question what I was doing as a vegan. Once I gave up being a vegan, I was able to revisit all of that information that I had sort of shoved away. And the result really was my book, The Vegetarian Myth, because I think that the people who care most about the planet just don't have the information to either build the correct political movement that we really need, and also to make their own choices in terms of their personal lives and what they're going to eat. It looks like the best option, but if you understand the problem at a deeper level, it's not actually.
Okay. Well, we got a lot of ground to cover in this all too brief show, but just before moving on, I just want to touch briefly on the health impact. You describe in your book that the effects of veganism on you, and it's pretty excruciating to hear about, and not less to experience, I'm sure. However, I know a lot of people that have been vegetarian for a long time who seem perfectly healthy to me. Is it, was this something particular to you, or do you think this is a widespread issue?
I think it's very widespread. I think that the human body was never meant to absorb that amount of sugar. And whether you call it complex carbohydrate or white sugar, whatever you want to call it, it is just sugar. Every last molecule has to be absorbed into your bloodstream, and it is sugar. And that's a big part of the problem. I do think that if you're a vegetarian, you're going to last a lot longer than you are as a vegan, because at least you're getting some complete proteins and some animal fats and some of those fat-soluble vitamins. But as a vegan, no, you're going to collapse. And the last study they did, actually surveying vegans and how often they cheated, once a week, vegans eat beef, which to me was a shock, because I never cheated on beef, but I certainly binged on eggs and dairy every chance I got. And then, you know, it was this whole model almost of sin and redemption. You know, you would feel terrible about what you had done, and the next morning you would wake up and say, I'm not doing it again, I'm a vegan, and you would, you know, go back to your soy and your brown rice, and, you know, that would last a week, and then you'd fall right back off the wagon. The reason is, you're starving when you do this. I mean, omnivores don't binge on vegan food. It's the vegans who binge in the other direction. And I think we need to, especially as a feminist, we need to accept our animal bodies and the fact that they have nutritional needs. And those do not bend ideology, no matter how much we would like them to. The physical reality is going to win. And for vegans, it wins by cheating. And, you know, having been out of that world now for almost 10 years, it's universal. I mean, everybody that I've talked to who tried it, it's the same problem and the same guilt and the same remorse. And then, you know, dedicating yourself again on Monday morning to being a vegan.
Okay, well, we're going to get on to the environmental side, although, of course, you can't really divide these things up like that. But anyway, right. We will try admitting the fallacy of that. I just want to say to the listeners out there, we are going to welcome callers today. However, I want to caution you. I know that, you know, many of Leah's views may be controversial to you. She certainly attracted controversy in the past. So if you want to call in and challenge her or express an opinion, that's fine. But just make sure that you have a concrete point to say. Don't just, you know, rally against her and disagree for the sake of it. But anyway, we would love to hear your viewpoints. And the number to call is 510-848-4425. That's 510-848-4425. Yeah, your book challenges the idea that a vegetarian diet can avoid harm to animals. How is that the case?
Okay, so having already stated that there's no excuse for factory farming, we need to move on a little bit deeper. And we have to understand what agriculture is. Okay, you take a piece of land, you clear every living thing off it, and I mean down to the bacteria, and then you plant it to human use. So, you know, first problem is that it's a mass extinction. Those animals that need to live there have nowhere else to go. It's biotic cleansing. You're taking over entire chunks of land, and you're only growing humans on it, which means that nobody else can live there. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that this lets the human population grow to some pretty scary numbers, because you're not sharing that land with millions of other creatures who should be living there. And the third problem is that when you do this, you destroy the topsoil, and soil is the basis of life itself. We owe our entire existence to 6 inches of soil and the fact that it rains. If you look around the world, we are out of topsoil. This is because for 10,000 years, the human race, most humans anyway, have been on this trajectory. There are still 46 remaining tribes of hunter-gatherers, but everybody else has been doing this, and it means that we're out of topsoil. In 1950, there should have been an inevitable, if scary, collapse of the human population. What happened instead was the Green Revolution. And so instead of eating fossil soil, we have now been eating fossil fuel. If you are eating grain, you are eating oil on a stalk. That's what's fertilizing it. That's what's making it possible, because there is no more soil. So across the world, 98% of the grasslands are gone. 99% of the old growth forests are gone. This is because humans took up agriculture, and we have wiped out, you know, entire ecosystems around the world. Every place that agriculture could be done, agriculture has taken what it's wanted. And what I say is that agriculture is carnivorous, and what it eats is entire continents. And that's what it's done around the globe.
You bring up some pretty alarming examples in your book. You say that theoretically, once upon a time, a squirrel could have gone from Maine to Texas without touching the ground. And also pointing out that the Fertile Crescent, which includes modern-day Iraq, used to be all forest.
True. And all of that was taken down to do agriculture. The problem with agriculture is that, you know, it's inherently destructive. So you are always on drawdown. And having used up your land, you're going to have to go out and take somebody else's land. And this is why agricultural societies always, no exception, always end up militarized, okay, because they're inherently destructive practices of drawdown. So having used up your resources, you have to spread out and, you know, go take them from somebody else. Nobody willingly gives up their trees and their soil and their water and their fish and whatever. They have to be taken by force. And that's one reason why there's always a military in an agricultural society, ultimately, eventually. It may not happen in the first 100 years, but it will certainly happen in the first 1,000. And so there's a class of people whose job is to go out and get the stuff that the power center needs. And those people are called soldiers. So you don't see that with hunter-gatherers. You don't have an entire class of people whose job is war, whose job is imperialism. And so this is this terrible feedback loop that the human race has been on now for 10,000 years.
Pretty big stuff. Okay, well, we have Sherry from Oakland on the line. Sherry, how are you?
Is that me?
Yeah.
Well, actually, the name is Shri.
Shri, sorry.
Okay. I don't know where to begin. I'm trying to avoid odd homonyms. Your arguments are frankly mythic. You know, the fact, the real demon is that there's too many people on the planet. And to go back to the mythical hunter-gathering is a delusion. So, and also to this categorization, black and white, all agrarian societies or this way or that, is just, you know, taking history and twisting it to your own what you want to get out of it. And I would just suggest, actually, you know, you were fundamentalist, you know, fanatic in the beginning, and now you've swung to the other end, you know, to what you're saying now. And, you know, you have speak a lot of truth, but it's not reality-based, you know. And as a lacto vegetarian, I'm saying, you know, get balanced, study your anthropology better, subsistence strategies, and then you'll understand how to do. Small is beautiful, and that's the way to go. Well, I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, Leah, briefly, I'm sure you've had those kind of comments in the past. What's your response?
Well, I wish that it was true, but the problem is this is an inherently destructive process, and we cannot just keep taking over ecosystems and putting them to human use because there aren't any left. And the only hope we have for this planet is to repair what we have destroyed. For instance, if we were to take all of the agricultural land, which is quite trashed, everywhere east of the Dakotas, put it back into those perennial polycultures that it would like to be, that it would naturally organize if we would leave them alone, the United States would actually immediately become a net carbon sink. And if we could do this on 75% of the trashed out grasslands around the world, all of which are in a state of complete collapse, okay? I mean, we're at the end trajectory of this process. If we could restore those grasslands, we could actually sequester all of the carbon that's been released since the beginning of the industrial age.
But you would agree with our caller that population is definitely an issue.
Oh, absolutely. But the thing is, it's agricultural societies that have population problems. And it's because it breaks the correspondences between how many people your land can support and your culture, which tells you how many people your land can support. In other words, hunter-gatherers are hungry immediately if they overshoot, immediately. If you eat more than your land base can support, everybody's hungry within, you know, 6 months to a year. So you know how many children you can have per how many productive adults. It's very clear. Everybody knows the number. And I'm not saying infanticide is fun, but that's been the fallback plan for 4 million years. Because the other option is you destroy everything. And that certainly isn't an option with the future.
All right.
Agriculture is the opposite. As you are destroying, your population can increase and increase and increase. And there is eventually a population collapse. This is the history of every civilization that's ever existed. That, you know, the population, it grows and it grows, and then the whole thing collapses on itself because they run out of topsoil, ultimately. Also water and trees and the other things that civilizations always need. But the soil is what really gives out, and that's at the bottom of why civilizations always collapse. And they used to be limited by the amount, by the distance that pack animals and human foot power could get people. And that's over now. You know, we've got machines doing it. The whole thing's gone completely global. So civilizations used to actually be, quote, human scale, which is sort of a funny way to think about it, but they did. Rome could only get so big. You know, the pack animals could only get so far. What saved most of Europe from the Roman Empire was actually the Alps, because they couldn't get the supplies back and forth. But they could get around Northern Africa. And that's why all the forests of Northern Africa fell was defeat the Roman Empire and to build the ships, and also the previous empires that came right before Rome. They all needed ships for imperialism, and it takes like somewhere around 800 old growth trees to make one of those giant ships. So that's the Andean forest right there.
Okay.
And I have to say, if you're willing to destroy your forest, you will always have an advantage over the people who are not willing to destroy theirs. And that's why the agricultural solas win.
Okay, we also have Harry from San Francisco on the phone. Harry, are you there?
Hi. Yes, good morning.
What's your question?
Good afternoon. Yes, I have heard it said that there's no fanatic like the convert, and why is it that Miss Keith seems to have this huge bias against someone actually being a vegan just because she doesn't want to be a vegan anymore? And I understand that Bill Clinton is now a vegan. There's also many steps such as eating some meat, milk, and dairy. You don't need to be a full-fledged carnivore. And in fact, being a full-fledged clergy, people do be a full-fledged carnivore is going to be detrimental to their health. So I was wondering, why is it that she's on this campaign that she criticizes people just for being vegan just because she doesn't want to be one?
Well, that's not actually my campaign. My campaign has got two, I guess if you're going to call it a campaign, I have sort of two motivations. One is that I don't want the next generation of very idealistic young people to make the same mistake that I did. I was drawn into this because, you know, I was handed a complete program and it seemed to make sense at age 16. And all that happened was I destroyed my body in the end. And I don't want that to happen to the next generation. And the other problem is that I feel like the left at large, the environmental movement, has really taken up this vegetarian program as a way to save the world. It will not save the world. It is how we have destroyed the planet. We've had 10,000 years. We have trashed our only home through agriculture. More of the same will not save us. We have got to restore the prairies, the wetlands, and the forests if this planet has any hope. And agriculture is the exact opposite. And we need to understand that because our planet is dying.
Well, Leah, you say that you know, agriculture is really the underlying problem, but given the context in which people are living now, as imperfect as it is to live with unsustainable agriculture, isn't that at least better than living also depending on the meat industry too?
Well, it's not two separate industries. They're exactly the same. That's the problem, too. You can't just try to pull one out of the other. Factory farming is completely dependent on industrial agriculture that's made possible by fossil fuel. It wasn't invented until 1950 because the Green Revolution created this gigantic surplus of corn, especially. Without that surplus, factory farming makes no sense. Putting animals in these horrible environments and stuffing them full of a substance that they are not designed to eat only makes sense if that substance is as cheap as corn has become. There are six corporations that essentially control the world food supply, and they are the ones that make all of this possible. They drive the price of corn down below the cost of production, which means that farmers every year have got to produce more of a surplus. And that's the problem. That's what's created factory farming. So you're not going to get rid of one without getting rid of the other. But, you know, I see that there's a lot of hope here. There's 33 countries that have either negative or stable population growth. It's actually not that hard. We know how to reduce the population. You raise the status of living, and you also raise the status of women. And if you do those two things, the population will drop, actually, sometimes very rapidly. Iran is a fabulous example of, you know, the ways that entire societies can get behind this program and actually have a profound impact within 5 to 10 years. This is not hard. But what it means is we have to be against capitalism because people are poor because the rich are stealing from them, right? And we also all need to be feminists because around the world, women have no control over the uses to which men put our bodies. So those two things, you know, have got to be part of the political program. If we do that, we could very easily reduce our numbers and once again start to repair the forests and the wetlands and the prairies that are really our planet's only hope.
Okay, well, this is Terra Verde, a weekly environmental radio show on 94.1 KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley or KFCF in Fresno. Today, author and activist Leah Keith joins me, Adam Greenfield, to discuss why she thinks vegetarianism isn't quite the environmental panacea many people think it is. And moving on the phone, we also have Rose from San Francisco. Rose, are you there?
Hi, yes. Hi, I'm really confused about Leah's arguments about how going back to eating meat and dairy is pro-feminist and anti-capitalist, and how that would actually improve the agricultural devastation that we all face right now. So that's one. The second thing is, Leah, I feel really sad that you had such a bad experience as a vegan, but it sounds like you didn't eat right. And I think it's dangerous for you to say that your experience is common because I've been a vegan for 16 years and a raw vegan for 3 years, so I don't eat any soy or any corn.
Wow.
Or any, you know, processed tofu, and I have never felt better. So I think it's really dangerous to spew this rhetoric without backing it up with scientific information. And I've met so many people who are raw who have reversed diabetes, they've reversed arthritis, they have cured cancer. And the fact is, meat and dairy, eggs, this whole industrial food system that we're facing right now causes incredible diseases. And I would encourage all of your listeners to see the documentary called May I Be Frank and Reversing Diabetes in 30 Days.
All right, Leah, your response?
Well, to go back to the first question about meat and dairy and animal products, the vast majority of what plants produce is cellulose. Okay, that's like 90% of what they produce, and we have no mechanism to actually digest cellulose. So what we have been eating for 4 million years are the creatures that have figured out how to eat cellulose, and we eat them instead. And then in the end, the soil eats us all, and it makes a cycle. And that is how ecosystems survive, is by recycling everything that exists back into the food chain. By doing agriculture, we interrupt that, and we interrupt it profoundly because we destroy, you know, the grasses and the trees and the wetlands and the creatures that do that work for us, all the bacteria, the microorganisms upon which all of life depends. By doing agriculture, we destroy that. And if we could repair that, we would take our place once more. The only options that life offers us are the death that is a part of that cycle or the death that's destroying that cycle. And it's agriculture that's destroying that cycle. And we have, one more time, we have got to repair this planet and take our place once again as members of a soil-building community. When we do agriculture, we are parasites on that soil-building community. And for 10,000 years, we've pretty much done our damage. There is no soil left. There are no continents left. We are going to have to stand and face what we've done and do that repair. You know, we can go back and forth about the studies and the books and who does well health-wise and all that. And, we don't have time on this one what's left of the show. There are plenty of books out there about, you know, Paleolithic nutrition and the history of the human race and what we did eat for 4 million years. And nobody really questions that except people who want to live in a fairy tale. There's no scientific debate about the fact that for 4 million years, we essentially ate meat. We still have Paleolithic bodies, and we need those Paleolithic foods. I was not a junk food vegan. I did not eat white sugar for 20 years. I mean, literally, I would not eat ketchup if there was sugar in it. I was that fanatical. I had the cleanest, most healthiest, most organic vegan diet that you could ever have wanted, and I destroyed my health. Why? There's not enough protein, there's not enough fat, there's not enough fat-soluble vitamins, and there's certainly not enough minerals, and I ate a bunch of stuff that, in fact, we don't need, like way too many omega-6s, which create inflammation. I mean, I can go on. I understand what I did to myself and how it happened, and all that information is out there for people who are falling apart and don't understand why.
Okay, I agree with you, Leah, that I think we've touched on the health issue enough, and we're never really going to resolve or cover that issue on the show. It is controversial. But I want to ask you, if you think agriculture is so damaging, then and meat should be part of our diet, then what's the alternative to agriculture?
Well, the alternative is to repair. Like I keep saying, we got to repair the prairies and the wetlands and the forests, get our food from inside them. And that was what we did for 4 million years. We were actually participants on this planet. We were not destroyers and monsters. That's only been in the last 10,000 years. Up till that point, we were able to be members of this community, and we took our place as, you know, the animals that we are. So right now, I would say, you know, our best bet is to repair those prairies, especially. They are incredibly good at sequestering carbon. That's what grass does. It's an amazing thing. And, of course, the basic building block of soil is carbon, and so that's why they're so good at it. They build soil. That's their job. So anything you can eat that comes off a prairie or off a grassland, off a pasture, you are sequestering carbon. As opposed to the foods that destroy that and release that carbon, there is no form of crop cropping that does not release carbon into the atmosphere. That UN report is a bunch of bunk, and they've admitted that they completely did it wrong, the one that you referenced in the beginning.
Oh, livestock's long.
Yeah, I mean, they were comparing apples and oranges, because with the agriculture, the animal agriculture, they took the entire life cycle of that food and how much carbon there was. And for things like transportation, they didn't. So if they had included, the carbon it takes to make steel, the carbon it takes to move the steel parts, the carbon it takes to, you know, produce the whatever, the engines and the tires and all that. And then finally, how much gas is actually used inside you know, internal combustion engines. But they didn't. They just took that final factor. So, of course, comparing this, it's a fake comparison. And when this was pointed out to them, they said, you're right, we just lifted numbers from somebody else's report. We didn't even question how they had done it. So they're redoing those numbers, but it ends up being more like 2 or 3%. So it's absurd. And there used to be vastly more numbers of ruminants on this planet, and there was not a problem with global warming. It is not the animals that have created this problem. It's the humans, and especially the industrial humans. And all of this, I think, is just a way not to face that we are going to have to stop burning fossil fuel. Nobody will question industrial civilization, and we are going to have to not just question it, but stop it if this planet has any hope.
Well, when you say, I just want to pick you up on the specific point of repairing the grasslands. How do you do that?
It actually does it itself. I mean, this planet wants to be a grassland and a forest. All we have to do is get out of the way. In the meantime, of course, you know, we could stop destroying it. Every time you run a plow over it, you're destroying it. It's a war. It's a war against the natural world. Iowa alone uses the energy equivalent of 4,000 Nagasaki bombs every year. Why? Because the planet wants to be a prairie. It doesn't want to be a cornfield. When you look at a cornfield or a wheat field, you're looking at a clear cut of the grass forest. It's been destroyed to make way for corn and wheat and soy and whatever. And so, yes, you bring back the prairie. It's not that hard. The grass wants to be there. And this is really, you know, the project for the generation. This is what I think young, idealistic people should be aiming for, is to get out there and start repair the prairie and bring the bison back, because it's really the bison that need to live there. They are the people who are, you know, co-evolved with those grasses and with that climate, and they know how to survive, and they know how to make that community denser for other creatures as well. The moment you bring the bison back, there's all these birds that return immediately because of the ways that bison behave on their land. So they are very, very good community members. They're keystones in the way that salmon are in the Pacific Northwest. We need those bison back if that grass is going to survive, and we need that grass for our planet to survive. And what people used to eat was the bison, and that made a cycle.
It's difficult, though, isn't it? I mean, to question something as widespread as agriculture. I mean, people listening out there are thinking, well, you know, if I agree with your main points, then what do I actually physically do?
Well, I mean, it's a real quandary for people in cities, especially because the overshoot is so intense. But ultimately, you know, humans will be living at sustainable numbers, or we will not be here. And there are only so many people that the planet can support, you know, before we destroy it. So, I mean, we can do that in an ugly way and let nature run its course, or we can help it along and do the things like they've done in Iran to reduce the birth rate in a way that respects human rights and, you know, reduce our numbers, reduce our footprint, and bring back the prairies and the wetlands and the forests again. For now, I would say the best thing people can do is look for local farms that have grass-fed bison, grass-fed beef, pasture-raised chicken. In areas where there's enough water, dairy is certainly an appropriate food. But it's very different than what we've been told, for sure. Mm. And as environmentalists and as leftists, you know, we've been really led down this sort of starlit path about how agriculture is really the answer, and it's the root of the destruction.
Now, your book obviously is very critical of vegetarianism, but isn't there something to be said for, you know, a lot of people became vegetarians or vegans because they questioned the horrors around them, and, you know, even if, in your opinion, people aren't at where they need to be, isn't there something to be said for people that have questioned and that are willing to make changes and moving forward somehow?
Yes, and that's why I have addressed this book especially to those people, because I think that those are the only people who are really going to make the change that needs to happen. They're the only people who are going to spearhead the movement that we need. And they've been led astray by lack of information. But, you know, I would still say that there's a base of values that we all share, which is we've got to question human hubris. We've got to question human entitlement. We are after a world that is about justice and sustainability and compassion. So the values that underlie all of this are not at issue. Okay? Those are the only values that are going to get us to the world that we need. The problem really is one of information. And we've got to understand that agriculture is the basis of the problem.
Well, Leah, we've run out of time, unfortunately. Thank you for a very stimulating discussion, and to our listeners for contributing.
Well, thanks, Adam.
Thanks to Leah Keith for joining me today. We hope you will join Terra Verde next week. This show and others are available at kpfa.org. I'm Adam Greenfield. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
Wilderness designation is an act of Congress and considered the most serious form of protection for federal public land. The California Wilderness Coalition is the only statewide organization that works solely on mapping, studying, and protecting California's landscape as wilderness. The California Wilderness Coalition will hold its annual fundraiser on November 12, 2010 from 6 to 9 p.m. at the David Brower Center, 2150 Alston Way in Berkeley. All proceeds from this event benefit the California Wilderness Coalition. For more information, call 510-451